Missouri School of Journalism. Welcome to Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. A little less than four decades ago, China's population was nearing the 1 billion mark. In 1979, this led the Communist Party to institute the one-child policy to slow the country's population growth. That policy was lifted in 2015 and replaced with a two-child policy. But the effects of 36 years of strict population control will be felt for years to come. For one thing, parents of those children born in the early years of the policy are now retiring from the workforce. As the population of elderly Chinese grows, there will be fewer and fewer working-age people to support them. Today, there are about 7.6 workers for every person over 65 in China. By 2050, fully 40% of the population could be that age. And the country is projected to have 100 million age 80 and over by mid-century. But the graying of China's population isn't the only long-term impact of the one-child policy. It's also led to other unplanned outcomes, like the imbalance in the gender ratio that's fueled human trafficking of women both in China and in neighboring countries. In a few minutes, we'll dive into some of these issues with a panel of guests who have tracked this issue up close. First, we're going to talk about how the one-child policy affected the lives of millions of people who found themselves on the wrong side of the law. And for that, we're joined by Shanshan Chen. She's a multimedia journalist for the Thomson Reuters Foundation. She made a short film in 2016 about several people whose lives have been forever altered by the one-child policy. And she joins us now from London. Shanshan, welcome.
Hi, Jason. Hi, everyone.
Well, thanks so much for joining us. So you made this film called Invisible Lives in 2016, just as the one-child policy had been lifted. And you basically followed three different families to get their stories. And one of those was the family of a guy named Yang Zhizhu, who is a law professor. Tell us, if you would, about his story.
So basically, I got in touch with Yang fairly easily. He's basically a celebrity in China. His story actually being reported a few years ago when he had his second child by several Chinese newspapers. And he's been a long-term campaigner to abolish the family planning rules. So we say one-child policy is just one aspect of family planning rules. So when he had a second child, he's actually quite excited, and then he kind of promoted himself. He also begged outside university. So I got in touch with him just through a contact. Then we chat through the phone a few times, and he's very passionate. I just found he's a great character, and he can explain the history of family planning rules very well. So I decided to take him as part of my film.
And he lost his job at the university teaching law. He got fined something like, I don't know, tens of thousands of dollars by the government for having this second child. What did he do?
So you mean what did he do? What happened is somebody contacted him, just asked him not to go to work, but he's still being paid. He's still being paid a salary because he's been promoting his very liberal ideas. So the university a bit scared that he might talk about it to the students. So they basically say, okay, I'm going to pay you, but stay at home. So now he is buying a lot of souvenirs from the period of family planning rules, of people's marriage certificate and the certificate to prove that people actually can have a second child or have a first child.
So he lost his job. Then the university said, okay, even though you had a second child, you can stay working for us because you're causing all this ruckus. We just don't want you to teach. And so now he's become something of a curator of these artifacts from this period of China. Another person you talked to, her story was quite sad. It was a woman in her early 20s named Li Zhu. And she lived in Beijing. She was her family's second child. So she had an older sister, not much older than her. Talk to us about how Li Zhu's life was different as a second child than her older sister's.
So she was born as a second child of this local Beijing family, but her sister went to school and she never been to school, and then she never had a library card, she never have a health insurance, and she never travel out of Beijing. So when we were hang out, she asked me a lot
She
of
couldn't
things.
travel because you can't buy like a bus ticket or a train ticket without ID.
No, she couldn't buy a train ticket without the ID. She never had an ID. And also, she was studying law at home because she trying to prove that she could be registered, which is true because family planning rules should be separate from registration with the police. So she's been suing different departments just to prove she's right. Fortunately, she was registered in August that year, and then she's thinking she want to continue studying, and one day she probably can enroll into a college and get a job.
So basically, she was like an
Yeah.
unregistered, invisible person in a way. And so she couldn't attend school, couldn't get a library card. I understand she can't even get married without a government identity card. Then she finally gets one. And so, in the meantime, she's lost 23 years of her life.
Yes, exactly. In a way, Wan Lixian knew that she could register because the rule was lifted, the one child policy was lifted. In a way, she kind of resisted to register because if she did, like she did now, actually nobody can compensate her anything. Nobody can prove that they've been doing wrong not to register her. So, but now she's still trying.
So
She's
she
still
still has to
waiting.
fight with the bureaucracy even now, it sounds like, that after the policy has been changed.
It's quite interesting that then eventually she registered, but before all the she doesn't have any record. Still, when she go to the hospital, they're still struggling to. She get her record because he never had one. So things like that is really make her life much, much difficult than many others.
Well, our time does grow short, but one of the other people you interviewed was a woman named Lu Shunyan. She had two children from two different marriages. Then she had a third child out of wedlock, and so that was like a double violation of the family planning rules. Tell us just briefly her story.
Exactly. So basically, she married twice before, and she has two children. And under the previous rule, if you have you a couple can maximum have two children. So if you marry a third time, you actually cannot have a third child. But then she actually have another child out of marriage, which means in China you couldn't register your child if that child is from outside marriage. So single parents couldn't register children. Now some people tried and then they managed to register, but the thing is she wouldn't know what would happen if somebody would find her, and that her child actually faced a lot of stigma as the child of single parent.
Well, Shan Shan Chen, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
This is Global Journalist. On today's program, we're talking about the legacy of China's one-child policy. That policy was ended in 2015 after 36 years, but some of its impacts are still being felt and maybe felt for decades to come. Now, to expand our discussion, we're going to bring in three other guests who have been following this issue. Joining us from Cleveland is Li Hongxi. She's an assistant professor of anthropology at Case Western Reserve University. In London is Raffaello Pantucci. He's director of international security studies at the Royal United Services Institute for Defense and Security Studies. He's also a founder of the Young China Watchers blog. And in Washington, D.C. is Rachel Burton. She's the deputy director of the Project 2049 Institute, a think tank that researches Asia Pacific issues. Welcome to all of you. Li Hongxi, let me start with you. We did hear about sort of the difficult impacts this policy had on some individual lives from Shen Shen Chen, but the Chinese government, of course, has focused on changing society as a whole. And so, can you tell us just maybe what some of the positive impacts, if there were some, of the one-child policy were on China?
I think the positive impact, one could be because due to the one-child policy, there are a large number of singleton daughters, and they do not have a male sibling to compete with them for parental support and family resources. And so for these daughters, well, they definitely benefited, especially in from areas where there is a long history of some preference. And I think also for the young parents, now they are relieved from the burden of having more than one child. So then they have the time and the family resources to pursue their career and maybe an education. Yeah, so I guess this could be the positive aspect of the one-child policy.
Well, Raffaello Pantucci, let me go to you. You were in China at the time this change was announced. Were you surprised by the reaction, how people reacted to the ending of this policy?
Well, I mean, it was quite interesting because I lived the time in Shanghai, which is a fantastic international cosmopolitan city and really very modern. And it was sort of interesting to talk to my colleagues. I used to be based out of a research institute in Shanghai. And when I talked to them about, you know, this change happening and whether this meant that they would, you know, push to now have a second child, the sort of funniest experience I would note, or what I would notice, was that colleagues would say, well, actually, no, you know, life in Shanghai is quite expensive. Already raising one child is a very expensive prospect. You know, the idea of, you know, spending the money on raising another, you know, now that the law has changed, I mean, some of them were very keen on the idea, but most of them were quite concerned about, you know, the amount of cost that this would place upon them, which, you know, it's interesting to think about because, of course, that's a very kind of Western preoccupation. If you look at sort of Western, you know, wealthy societies, they tend towards people having less children because, you know, people are focused on their careers because, you know, having children is very expensive within these environments. So I think what's interesting in some ways is that when in Shanghai, this very sort of outward-facing city, you saw very much a kind of reflection of the demographic trends already taking place when this law had changed to sort of reflect the same demographic trends you see in other Western cities.
And Rachel Burton, you've spent a couple of years living in a rural part of China in Yunnan province. What did you see of the one-child policy there? How did it affect people's lives in the countryside in small villages?
Yeah, so I had a very opposite experience than what Raffaella had. I was in Yunnan at the time when the one-child policy was reversed, and I actually found that many of the families in the rural areas who are mostly farmers or their migrant workers were really excited that they now had these limitations lifted on them, and they really wanted to have more children. There were families who had already had one and were probably near their mid-30s or late-30s who were teachers that were excited about the prospect of providing their child with a sibling to play with and a sibling to be able to share a life with. And so there was actually more excitement because there was a lot of stories coming out of these villages of families who really struggled with abortions, who struggled with losing a child due to sickness and not able to have another.
Because in the early, because during the one-child policy, in some regions, people were forced to be sterilized. There were sort of coerced or forced abortions of second, third children then.
Yeah, and a lot of those concerns remain. I think in November 2015, the UN Committee Against Torture conducted a review of China's compliance underneath the Torture and Other Cruel, Inhumane, or Degrading Treatment and Punishment Convention. And they found that there are still concerns of coercive measures, including forced sterilization, forced abortions, and a lack of information regarding the number of investigations into these allegations. So there are still concerns about these coercive measures against Chinese women and families continuing even under the two-child policy.
Well, Li Hongxi, you heard Raffaello talking about his experience in Shanghai. You heard Rachel speaking about her experience in a very rural part of China. What has happened to China demographically since the one-child policy has been lifted? Have we seen that there has been sort of a big burst of fertility, of babies being born?
So the birth rate for 2006 and 2016 and 2017 has increased, but the increase was not as high as the government had estimated. So there are not as many couples who are enthusiastic to have a second child as the government had expected. And mostly it's because of economic reasons, as Raffaello mentioned. And because the cost of raising a child has increased, And this is due to the cost of a child's education, and also there's a rise of the consumption in terms of child rearing. And another factor is, well, the young couples, they're not very interested in having a large family, and they also want to just have the time and the family resources for themselves. So they're not burdened with raising a second child. And so I think the economic factor is the major reason that China hasn't seen a large baby boom as the government had expected.
Okay, so in other words, it sounds like, if I recollect correctly, in the 70s, the fertility rate was something like 3 to 4 child per woman. Now the policy has been lifted again, and it seems like actually the culture, like what people expect a family should look like or how big it should be, has actually changed as a result.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Well, in the 70s, there was already a family planning program in the 70s. And before 1979, fertility rate was already very low. It was a little bit over 2.1, which was the replacement level. And after the one-child policy was enforced in 1979, fertility rate dropped. It has dropped below the replacement level for many years. And so now the government realized that they cannot afford a one-child policy anymore. And because of the consequences of the policy, a large number of the aging population, the skewed sex ratio, and also a large number of families who lost their only child were under the one-child policy. And so it's under these circumstances the government realized that they have to lift up the one-child policy. But the response to the two-child policy has not been very enthusiastic from the Chinese population.
Well, Raffaello Pantucci, I wanted to ask you about this two-child policy because we mentioned some statistics earlier in the show. You heard Li Hongxi talking about them. It sounds like China actually has a very grave demographic problem. So why are they limiting the number of babies that people can have to two when it sounds like they're going to be burdened really with an enormously old population in a relatively short period of time?
I mean, I think it's difficult because in some ways, the almost sort of polar opposite experiences that myself and Rachel had in terms of people's reactions to this policy, I think reflect an issue that you'll still find, which is this massive divergence in the sort of wealth and opportunities that you'll find in different parts of China. So if you go along the sort of eastern coasts and you look at the sort of cities in Shenzhen, Guangdong, in Shanghai or Beijing, you see, you know, pretty big urban centers with people who are increasingly moving towards the sort of habits of, you know, affluent populations. And in affluent populations, what we tend to see is less babies. We tend to see people more focusing on their careers, people focusing more on themselves and sort of, you know, generally finding life more expensive. And so having many children becomes a much sort of heavier burden. And that will sort of remain the issue there. But then on the other side of the equation, you've got these much poorer parts of the country where, you know, there is still a tendency towards many children. And both sides of that will create sort of different demographic pressures. If you've got lots of children, then the sort of costs will increase around local healthcare costs, around local around education costs, so all those sorts of burdens. Whereas at the other end, you know, you've got these sort of more prosperous cities which seem to be doing better. So I think the problem for China is that you've got they've gone from a situation where you had a policy which is specifically trying to restrict something to a situation now where obviously they're trying to change that and sort of adapt in some ways to the modernity that you're seeing within China. But at the same time, parts of the country haven't caught up yet to that same level of modernity. So the fear, I think, is that by completely lifting the policy, you're going to completely lose control of the situation, and that may have a different sort of demographic negative pressure on the country.
A reminder that you're tuned into Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. On today's program, we're talking about the legacy of China's one-child policy. That policy was ended in 2015, but some of the unintended and intended consequences of it are still being felt and will be felt for decades to come. We're joined by Lihong Shi of Case Western Reserve University, Raffaello Pantucci, a researcher for Royal United Services in London, and Rachel Burton of the think tank Project 2049 Institute. If you're interested in more global journalists, check us out online at globaljournalist.org. There you can find our archives and additional coverage of underreported international news and human rights issues. You can also like us on Facebook, where we live stream, follow us on Twitter, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, or see our videocast on YouTube. Well, Rachel Burton, let me go to you. I wanted to ask you about the issue of the gender imbalance right now in China. I've seen various statistics on this. By one estimate, there's something like 62 million women or girls missing from Chinese society as a result of this policy. Talk to us about what's going on. Why is this the case?
The gender imbalance is largely due in part from cultural phenomenon, but also with the restrictions based on the one-child policy, many families preferred to have male children. They were able to work, they were able to invest in their education. And so a lot of female babies were abandoned or put up for adoption. So that led to the gender imbalance. And on top of that, as the one-child policy led families to choose between either a female or a male, it grew an imbalance where many women are now finding that there's not as many men to marry. And that has led to, you know, an increase of what they call shengnu, leftover women. And Lita Hong Fincher has a great book where she talks about leftover women, the resurgence of gender inequality in China. But I think a larger issue of the gender imbalance is actually to talk about social stability in China and why social stability is so important to the Chinese Communist Party, which is why they insert these limitations, either the one-child policy or the two-child policy, because without social stability, there is not legitimacy for the Chinese Communist Party in order to continue to lead the country. And so I think it's not so much about the gender imbalance, but for me, it's about how social stability feeds into the legitimacy of the Chinese Communist Party leading the country into the next decades.
Well, Lihong Shi, let me ask you to tackle that one then. Is there an issue with stability, with social stability as a result of this? What are some of the issues when you look at things like the gender imbalance in the sort of working age population and these surplus men, if you will?
Well, there is a marriage screens for a large number of men, mostly in rural areas. And this is a result of the sex ratio imbalance for people of marriage age. And so a large number of these single men will probably never have a chance to marry. But I'm not sure about the impact on security. Yeah, I think I'm not quite sure. But I'm sure that the government is definitely concerned with the sex ratio imbalance. And that is one reason behind the relax of the one-child policy.
Well, tell me if you would as well about what does this mean, Raffaello Pantucci, for the retirement system, for the social security system in China, the healthcare system? If you look at having potentially 40% of your population over age 65, is it planning for this? Does it have the policies in place to sort of ensure a smooth transition to this older society?
I mean, I think they've recognized that this is a really big problem and they're trying to figure out how to manage it. But in some ways, you know, policy is one thing, but actually it's the expense that's going to be the big difficulty and the social pressure that this is going to put on individuals. Because, you know, one of the byproducts of the kind of one-child policy is that you've developed these family units where you've essentially got one child, which ends up carrying the responsibility in old age of, you know, two parents. And, you know, because people are living longer, in some cases, four grandparents. So a single individual become responsible potentially through their salary and their income for up to six adults. And then if they get married, you know, if it's a male, then they have to worry about all their mother, their wife's family. And then if they have a child. So, you know, it's putting a lot of pressure on sort of individuals because individuals are finding that they're having to support their sort of elderly parents in old age because the, you know, the government system is increasingly coming under pressure financially from the cost burden of having to support all these people. And this is happening, of course, at a time when we're seeing costs in China are increasing. And, you know, as I said before, if you're looking at the sort of coastal cities, you know, the costs are getting on a par with, you know, major Western capitals or, you know, big cities like Japan or Hong Kong. So, you know, you've got a very heavy expense coming down. And this heavy expense and this heavy cost burden is getting carried not only by the state, but also by this, you know, generation of one child children who are one family children who are, you know, being who are coming up and having to, you know, through their single salary support this ever growing community of their family.
And Rachel Burton, there has been a lot of reporting as well about the problem, the issue of human trafficking, of sex trafficking in East Asia. Is there a link between the one-child policy and human trafficking, trafficking of women in countries that neighbor China?
There's definitely a link. One issue that comes to mind is the issue of trafficking between North Korea and China, where you have actually a lot of North Korean women that are trafficked into China who end up marrying Chinese workers that are there along the border. And that's a large part due to the fact that in those areas, perhaps there are less Chinese women who are there. And then you also see a lot of trafficking within the country, where perhaps in the rural areas there might be maybe there are more women in the rural countryside who are then trafficked into urban areas, maybe told that they would be able to find a job or told that they can find a career that would help their family back home. And then they get trafficked and they become forced into marriages. They become forced to like live in these areas where they don't have a hukou, they don't have registration. And it's become a huge issue within China and how China works to engage and tackle this problem both within their country, but also with their neighboring countries, is something to look forward, something to look towards and to watch. And to tag on to Raffaello's point about kind of some of the strains on the economy, I think one thing to bring to mind is that this gender equality and this population demographic concerns are also feeding into worker strikes and to wage strikes as more and more factory workers are demanding higher pay. The population demographic is really going to cause a strain on both the economy moving forward as well as military recruitment.
And Li Hongxi, our time does grow short, but China, during the one-child policy, if I recollect correctly, it actually paid bonuses to couples who were older. If they really did only have one child, there was something like a one-off payment. Now China is facing a baby shortage. Are there some strategies that they can use to encourage people to have more babies that they're not doing now?
I'm not aware of any incentives for couples who are willing to have a second child. And I think right now, because the policy was just relaxed in 2015, I think the government is still waiting to see, you know, the impact of the policy relax. And I'm not sure at which point the government would consider offering incentives to encourage couples to have a second child. But that will be something to wait and see.
Well,
and eventually, if birth rate is not increasing, then the government has to do something. Yeah.
Well, Raffaello Pantucci, our time grows short, but we do have just about 25 seconds left. Tell us what your forecast is for the next 5 years, 6 years out. How is this issue going to look differently in China?
I mean, I think it's going to be a major problem. I mean, this demographic question is really going to trouble China. And it's very difficult for governments to try to change these demographic patterns around. I think China's problem is going to be that, you know, it used a very blunt tool to try to control its population a while back. And unfortunately, the natural economic trajectory that we see with countries where, you know, you start to see populations getting older as they become more affluent, may have less children, you know, that problem is going to become a really major issue within China in the near-term future. And it's one that could be a really major determinant of sort of social policy.
Well, we're out of time for this edition of Global Journalist, a production of the Reynolds Journalism Institute at the Missouri School of Journalism and KBIA Mid-Missouri Public Radio. Many thanks to Shanshan Chen, Li Hongxi, Raffaello Pantucci, and Rachel Burton. Our assistant producers this week are Lily Cusack and Hunter Bassler, with supervising producer Raina Sims. Jiwon Choi is visual editor, Aaron Hay is audio engineer, Travis McMillan is director. For all of us at Global Journalist, I'm Jason McClure. Thanks for tuning in.